about the relationship that you form with people. And that relationship is the place that you begin and the place that you end. Because how can you enter into a relationship unless you are truly being authentic? So we're going to hear about this and have the panel talk about where are you today on this journey of being yourself, the transformation of that. I'll start off and then we'll just go down the line.
Okay.
Where I find myself today is I'm Asian, American, I'm a woman. And growing up in Detroit, there weren't a lot of people who looked like me. And so the role models that I had, especially going into business, were exactly zero. And I think one of the key things here is that one of the things I found in my journey to be more authentic is trying to find and explore that side of my identity, especially more recently as a CEO and as a book author and a business author in particular. Because there just aren't that many voices, but feeling comfortable with that was my issue, not an issue of the audiences that really needed to hear from me. So I'm still in this journey. I'm still trying to figure out, testing it, exploring where it's possible, where I can draw my strength from. And really, I think it's a journey that you continue doing. I think I'm being authentic as much as possible. But then every day I challenge myself to say, how much more can I grow? How much more can I push myself? Because being on that edge of authenticity really means going beyond where your comfort zone is. So that's where I'm in my journey. So, Kat.
All right. I am in a really fortunate place right now in terms of leadership because I'm in a position where I'm CEO, I'm co-founder. Like you, I was in a corporate environment where I didn't hear a lot of voices like myself as I moved up through the ladder or the jungle gym or whatever you call it. And so today, now, I have the opportunity to make leadership decisions that match up with my values. Like, and also that are in response to things that I hated when I was in that voice of one environment. Like, we don't have performance reviews because it didn't make sense to me and everyone hated it, and you know, for all those good reasons. I'm also in a position, kind of unusual, where I have two co-founders and we truly do share the leadership and we share it with our amazing team, many of whom are here today. And it is a really it's a really fluid thing and really giving people opportunity for leadership. So it's like you, it's an interesting and evolving spot. But the best thing about it is that I get to make the decisions that I've wanted to all the way along the way. So make notes as you're going, like someday I'm going to do this.
So like Charlene, I deal with what some people call intersectionality. I'm part of two minority groups. I'm Asian American, like many of you in this room, and I'm also a woman. And I think for me personally, in terms of the journey, it's kind of two different spectrums. Sometimes they collide, sometimes they don't. And very early on, all my other founders are also Chinese American as well. And very early on, we actually made a purposeful decision to not put our faces on our website. You know how there's the about us and the team, and we were doing something that was a bit more enterprise. And we kind of looked at one another and we said, you know what, there's not a lot of people that look like us, particularly in the space that we were going after. And so we decided to just kind of hide our identity, or kind of our Asian-ness, if you will. And so I've always been a bit cognizant of that. I do look a little different than the majority. But being a woman, I think I started out, a lot of people would ask me, you know, what's it like being a female founder? So all my other founders are also male. So I'm the only woman there. And I used to think, like, well, I'm just working really hard. I don't see any difference. And it's something, you know, I don't see what's going on. And people just need to work harder and things will come. And I think as the company grew, as well as I grew, the numbers just weren't showing it. As we grew higher and even our executive team grew, there just weren't as many women. And I started to realize that reality is, as much as, you know, I may think as long as I just work really hard, things will come, they might be judging me through a very different lens. And I couldn't hide that piece of me. It was almost, I tell people, it's almost like we're both asked to run this 100-meter dash, but the women are asked to have, there's hurdles there, and you're supposed to do it in heels. It's like, what do they say? Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in heels. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that even though you might not be putting that on yourself, that there is some type of bias, that people do look at you as a woman, and then they make all these maybe assumptions and biases based off of that. And it's all these little things that kind of just add up. And I think one of the most insidious things is how it causes the minority group, either a woman or being Asian American, to doubt yourself. I mean, I think that is probably the most insidious thing. And I think with this new wave of leadership, which you wrote this great book about, of just bringing your authentic self, it's a really great challenge, particularly for women out there, to really kind of push themselves forward and be authentic. It's not necessarily saying be transparent with everything and everybody telling, like, have to tell everybody everything, but the authenticity of, you don't honestly have to hide being a woman in some way. Somebody said, oh, I feel like I'm coming out of the closet after 20 years. I'm a woman. you've already been out of the closet. It's people have known for quite some time. So that's where I am on the journey.
So I've had an incredible privilege to be in tech for 25 years. And when I was 33 years old, I was asked by a software company I was working for, and I was actually based here in the Bay Area, if I would move to Europe to run an EMEA business. And I want to share the story with you because being yourself was an experience that happened to me on one particular day in my career that I think has guided my career ever since. So when I moved to Europe, I had three young children. One, my son was a newborn. And we moved to London, and it was my first day. This business was a big business. There was about 2,000 employees. There were 8 men who were going to report to me. I was 33 years old, and they were all a lot older. 2 of them didn't speak English, and none of them knew that I was coming. So, and I'll tell you, you want to know nervous. I remember standing, and I remember actually the hotel I was staying in, I could see some of them, and was kind of not sure how it was going to go. But the point of my story was, that I want to share with you, is the day I walked into that room, if I wasn't myself, I would have failed. Because if you think about it in life, like the hardest things you have to do or the greatest things you do, you have to be yourself. And so there was no way I could try to be someone else or be like a guy or be like a mom or be like, I just had to be who I was. And it was pretty awesome. Those 8 men worked for me for 4 years and they all were themselves too. And today they remain some of my closest friends. And authenticity has to exist in that because you will build trust. And so that was my story. And since then, I've had the great fortune to have that experience behind me. And one thing I will just close out with is what comes with being yourself also comes with criticism. And you got to be able to take it. Because when you're yourself, I mean, you know, I'm always learning. And I've had people, there's people in this room that work for me and know that when you're yourself and you encourage others to be, they're going to also tell you when they think you do something wrong or you could do it better. So that's kind of my story, and still have a long way to go in this journey.
I'm going to pick up on that a little bit because I think one of the hardest parts about being a leader is being challenged. Because you think being a leader, like, I call the shots, but the reality is that you're there in service of the people you're trying mm-hmm. to lead. So how do you deal with the sense of that give and take, right, and the relationship and the authenticity that is there? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you're truly trying to be authentic. They may or may not be authentic. And then where do you meet them along that stage? Mm-hmm. So you want to just finish that in?
Well, I mean, everyone's got their own personal ways of doing things. I tend to trust when I meet. And I tend to lose trust versus you don't have to earn trust with me. I don't know if that's if everyone else is like that, but I tend to trust. And so I think what happens is when people know you trust them, you're kind of forcing them to be themselves a little bit, I think. That's worked for me. And you create a collaborative environment. And that's kind of how we've done that. There is give and take. And when trust is broken, it's really hard, I think, to fix it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to earn it. I have a thing that I say all the time, that if you have to have a team building exercise, it's too late.
Yeah.
And so you have, it's not going to happen. But if you show up and you're there and you are authentic and you really do it and you have the relationship, it's funny, the first thing I thought of when you were talking about when people criticize you or give you feedback is that I had a situation where we were growing quickly and trying to figure out, I was a CEO, I was doing the CFO stuff. I mean, you know, figuring it out all on the fly anyway, and definitely failing at some of the CFO stuff. And I had a colleague say to me, look, you can't do this. We need to go out and get, and she reported to me. So there was a lot of trust back and forth. But because we'd been through a lot of late nights and we'd been through a lot of that, what I consider like real life team building, where when you're up at 1 a.m. in a hotel room trying to prep for a client thing and you just don't know how it's going to go, you're tight. And then the next morning when you're doing your hair together, like just to get a bond. So you get that permission to be really candid about the things, the important things when they come up. I mean, that was a pivotal point in our growth as a company. We needed someone who could come in who was actually experienced and qualified to be running those numbers. And thank God we did. Thank God she said that, because today we have an amazing CFO. We have, you know, pristine books. I'd love to show them to you.
I want to go on to the second question, and then we're going to open up for questions from the audience. The second question is, how do you help people on their journeys? How, you are all leaders. How do you help people figure out where they are on the journey and help them along this path? So what do we start with?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I think one of the best things to do is to model it. So I work with a bunch of males, and I did an executive offsite, and our executive team were all males, and I had to kind of break down, like, presence, like what does that mean? And even to a point where, like, everybody put your phones in this like phone bucket, because we need you to be here and present. And I think it goes back to modeling some of the basics. I think it's a little bit to your previous question, I'll tie it together, is that I think it starts with kind of the listening piece of things, right? In order to be able to get somebody to trust you, you have to listen, and on top of that, you have to be a bit vulnerable. There is a push and give on if the other side is not willing to give, definitely do not keep on catering to someone who's just using you. We've definitely experienced that when we have just high growth. Some people come in with the wrong motivations, and you really kind of have to watch that meter in some ways. But the best thing to do is model it, particularly if you're the CEO. I realize that is the backstop, and I've had to sit down with my CEO, and I'm like, all right, we got to put our phones away. It's one-on-one time. This is what vulnerability looks like. This is, you have to share a little bit about yourself. And in fact, this one time, we had an internal company meeting, and usually sometimes I have a really hard time grabbing people there, so I do all the bells and whistles. I'm like, surprise, you don't want to miss it. They probably saw all through it, and my CEO sent out a note to everybody, and he goes, as many of you probably know, is I'm pretty scared of public speaking. And that day, it was just packed. I'd like to think it was like that I offered some treats, but we all think that it was because he showed a little bit of himself. Now I've just ratted him out. But he had a lot of problems public speaking, particularly in an internal setting. And so I think modeling it, particularly if you're in charge, people are watching you. I always say, culture is caught, not taught. And those things, like leadership is caught, not taught. Like those things, how you behave, that I think is your highest leverage as a leader. And even if you're not in a title leader, people are still watching you and you have immense influence.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think modeling is critical. I also think that what I've tried to do with my teams is encourage people to set their own expectations or to communicate their expectations. I mean, I didn't have a career in tech for 25 years because people came up to me and said, hey, what would you like to do? I had to say what I wanted. And so I try to build an environment in our organization where I ask people, what do you want? If you want to go to the next level or if you want to have this career develop, you have to own it, because no one's going to ask you. It's just never going to happen. So I try to lead a team to create an environment where people feel safe that they can say what they want. But I also, if you don't say what you want, you can't kind of complain about not getting it, because no one will know. So set those expectations, I think, is really important. And I think it creates a safe environment too for people to feel they can thrive and be themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. To build on, I actually have two things to build on, both of you. So one, I think it's, first of all, really important for everyone, and especially women, to only stay in a job where you are welcome. And by that, I mean, if you're in a job where people are saying, if only you could change everything about yourself, you'd be perfect. You don't have to stay there. It's okay. Don't believe the myth of scarcity. There are other jobs out there. There are other opportunities where you will be valued for exactly what you bring to the table. So on the leadership side, it's very, very important as a leader for you to get out there and say, you are welcome for the things that you bring. I am looking for someone who has what you can do, and I am open to you being like we have a thing where if you have to go pick up your kid in the middle of the day, no one will get mad at you. That should not be a big recruiting thing, but just the fact that we can do that. We've had like teary like meetings where people talk about how meaningful it was that they could go pick up their sick kid. That's our insane world. But that's really important. So like bringing your full self there, I think, and the thing that's important about that is that I want to work with someone whose values are that they put their child first. Okay. That's who I want to work with. So there's that. So as a leader, put that out there. And then the second thing is the vulnerability point. So I have a story that I tell. So I'm totally terrified of public speaking always. And so I push myself to do it. And I know myself well enough to know I have to practice and I have to like have it all worked out. So I was doing one that was kind of a big deal. It was like a mini TED talk, 5 minutes. It was being video recorded, you know, video, whichever. And so we had a team meeting where I had, you know, like 35 of my team members there. And I got up in front of them and said, you guys, I'm so scared. I'm doing this thing tomorrow. I want to practice for you. And I want you to know that this is hard for me. And I may come up here and we, you know, all of your leaders may come up here and do this, but we have to really practice. And I'm an introvert and I know that there are introverts out there who are quiet. So know that this is what it looks like and you can do this too. And, you know, I got some nice feedback afterwards that was helpful.
That's great. Yeah. That's really what's so interesting about the stories that you tell is that the way you help the teams, again, is by being authentic yourself in that way. And again, I want to encourage people to start coming up to the two microphones up here so we can call on you. I'm just going to do a couple of follow-up questions here. And one thing I hear a lot from leaders is that, and I hear this interestingly from women, is that it's not about me. It's really about my company. So I don't want to put myself out there. What advice would you give to people who may be a little bit reluctant to put themselves out there? I mean, this is an age of social media. It's an age of being able to speak out, be public, go out there and put your voice out there. What advice would you give to people who are feeling that hesitancy? How do we get over that?
I think you said it, actually, in that leadership is about service. It's not about putting yourself out there. It's about being a coach. It's about being a cheerleader. It's about making it possible for, you know, 12 people. If you have 12 people, then you have 12 brains and 24 hands who can help you achieve a goal. It's not about you at all.
I still think you probably have to take that first step. And I know I probably should not bring politics in, but if Trump can win presidency, just by saying, hey, I'm worth $10 billion, just shoot for it, say, I'm worth that much. But you could start out very small by, there's so many social media platforms, right? And if some of them are a bit scary for you, you could try, there's so many that you can try. And honestly, reality is you start out with zero followers. So you really have nothing to lose, is you start out with zero followers. So I think that if you're a little scared, just take comfort in that. And it's hard work. There's probably a lot of roundtables later talking about social media and how to build a brand and kind of get your story out there. Even though it is so much about the company, you are part of that company. For me personally, because I'm a founder, it's like there's just no difference between me and the company. So when it's like going down, it's horrible. And when it's going great, like in 2014, we hit over $1 billion in valuation, and that was just euphoric. Everybody in the company was amazed. And so I think that that type of thing, just getting, not necessarily, as you said, yourself out there, but getting the story out there and how you played a part in it, I think everybody can learn from that.
Yeah, I would just say be prepared, but also be prepared to be wrong sometimes, right? Like, putting yourself out there and having the confidence is great, but be prepared. I mean, you know, what's that saying about there's no stupid question? There actually are stupid questions, right? Like, there really are, like, honestly. And
ask
so
questions.
Just the
everybody,
last
thing. Come on up and ask your question now.
You're right. But I do think that it's really important that how you show up, and as a mom and a daughter, sometimes I can't show up. Like, sometimes I got to go to the school parking lot and direct traffic, or sometimes I got to go visit my mother who has Alzheimer's in a nursing home, and people are screaming, and I got to say, I can't show up now, right? So don't try to show up if you can't show up. So I think that's part of putting yourself out there. That's being honest, right? I think that's important.
Yeah. And just the advice I give to leaders who go, who's interested in seeing my lunch, right? Who would ever be interested in seeing my lunch up on social media? I would agree. I don't want to see your lunch. I want to know, though, what you talked about over lunch.
Right, right.
Right, that's the difference. I want to know what's on your leadership agenda. And believe me, if you're a leader, people are interested in what you're saying, what you're thinking, what you're doing, how you're feeling. And this is a wonderful place. Social media, internal channels especially, are fantastic places to explore that authentic self. I will say that I have been blogging for way too long, out there on Twitter right from the very beginning, and I still, to this day, my palms get sweaty every single time I post.
Wow.
You know, to this day, because if you don't, something's wrong. Right? Something's wrong that says you're not really putting yourself out there authentically every single time. So every time I think to myself, am I doing this the right way? Am I really thinking about my constituents, my audiences? Am I giving them the best that I can give? And when you do that, your palms better be sweaty or else you're not really truly serving them. All right, we have some great questions here. I'm excited to see them. We're going to get through as many of them as possible. And all I ask the people to do is to ask questions that the rest of the audience here can really benefit from. Okay? So let's go to you.
This is a question for Holly. And I'm curious, now that your company has grown and you've grown with it, is your photograph and information on your website?
Yes, it is. It is. And we also have another woman who's also SVP.
I have a question for Holly as well. My journey was very similar to yours in the sense that I thought if I just worked hard, I was going to get there until it stopped working. So probably about like 2 or 3 years ago, I realized there's something more than going to grad school at night and working hard all day. I'm curious, my niece is third year engineering, and so she's starting her career, going to her first internship, and we've been talking about kind of what I learned and what should she do. My question to you, and I don't have an answer for myself, is do you wish you not knew sooner? Do you wish that you knew there was more than just hard work and you tried to work different angles? Would you think that your journey would have been different, easier, better? Do I break it down to her now or just say, hey, work hard, you're going to get there? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think probably all the women here can attest that it's certainly a personal journey, and it's one of the weird things that you can tell her and break it down, yeah. But she might be one of those people, that it's like riding a bike. You could tell them how to ride a bike, but they have to get on the bike themselves, understand their own balance, and try to go through it. I do wish I would have found my balance a lot earlier, to be honest.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't know in this journey, you can certainly tell and talk and tell stories, because I've had them told to me too, and I'm like, oh, those ladies are crazy. It's not that hard, right? But of course, I'm like junior position, just doing some work there, pushing some buttons. But I know that would have impacted me quite a lot. And I do think it's great to influence your niece and give her examples. Like, I'm going to do a plug. I'm not paid by them, but Hidden Figures is a phenomenal movie. Take your daughters, go see it, just to have them see it.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine to just keep on telling, whether or not they ignore you or not, just know it's not your fault.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kristen, and I'm an entrepreneur in the fitness industry. I help women to optimize their physical health so that they can be more effective leaders. So as an entrepreneur, I'm always having to put myself out there in very vulnerable ways, as you all know. My question to you all is, what are your personal strategies to get out of your own way, you know, or your feelings of not enoughness when you're really trying to be authentically you?
That's a good question. Anybody? How do we get out of our own ways?
Everyone's looking at me. Okay. You know, sometimes I think, for me and my personality, is I have to stop every once in a while. I have to pause. And I surround myself with people who can help me with that pause. My children do. My husband does. But I also have phenomenal men and women who influence my life. And sometimes I need to be told, you need to stop and you need to just pause, and whether that's go for a walk or go to the spa. And I don't do that a lot, right? And so I get out of my own way by having people around me who help me to do that, if that answers your question. I think it's a lot to do with who's around you.
Right. Maybe this is kind of a contrarian answer, but you know, things aren't balanced. There isn't a balanced life. It isn't easy. And sometimes it does take being fully immersed, and you do just have to work insane hours and you don't have the opportunity to go for a walk, and that's okay. I mean, if you're passionate and you're working really hard and you're putting everything into it, you know, trusting yourself to make the decision that you really want to be there and keep doing it, and that there will come a time when you can balance it out, where there will be more downtime or something. I think there's a myth of this, like, balance or holding yourself back or something. Okay, go for it. Work all night. Be satisfied that you have that passion and you want to. Maybe that's not the healthiest thing, but, you know, balance.
As an entrepreneur, there are two things. To Haley's point, having a formal advisory board, it doesn't have to be a board of directors, but having an advisory board of outside people, very important. And just as importantly, a board of customers, because they will tell you exactly what you're not doing right. Mm-hmm. And you can trust both of those people to tell you what's going on.
That's, you said, a board of customers, right?
Board of customers.
Thank you.
An advisory board of customers.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Allison Kimball, and I'm from Clever. And this is a question. Hi. This is a question for the whole panel. So we talked a lot about authenticity and vulnerability and how important those are as a leader. I was wondering what, obviously a leader has to make a lot of intentional and impactful decisions. And I was wondering, where do you pull your methodologies or your answers from? Do they come from trial and error, from real life experiences? Do they come from your instinct as a leader, more of just that gut? Do they come from mentors or people who give you direct advice? Where do you find yourself consistently turning to make those tough decisions when there might not be a clear answer, but it falls to you to make a call?
So I'm not a big believer personally in gut feel. Like, I think gut feel is actually something that we call it that, but it's because of the experiences you've had, right? So that's my view. So I rely a lot on experience. And again, going back to, I have a couple of people who I trust incredibly, and I will also take advice and I listen to it. But for me, it's experience primarily. Mm-hmm. It's my experiences.
Yeah, your experience is the thing that forms its gut. But I certainly think that you should never, ever feel ashamed to ask for advice.
Right.
We didn't know anything, and there are so many people that I know I call all the time, just random, like, how is this done here? How do you guys run your meetings there? Are we running it most effectively? Definitely a lot of trial and error. These poor employees of mine just running through a guinea pig. But it's also creating a system of a feedback loop, right? When you are doing that trial and error method, to be able to allow people to give you the feedback of, like, is this working or is this not? So certainly, I think it depends what kind of decision it is. Certainly strategy calls, I think, are much more difficult to have somebody from the outside. I mean, you could have it, but you're going to walk through that door yourself. Other things that are probably been there, done that, like performance review process, how was that done over there? You could definitely go outside and ask those questions. But you will know your company the best, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm a member of YPO, Young Prisoners mm-hmm. Organization, which is absolutely fantastic. And being part of my forum there has really taught me to feel more confident about asking for help. And I think part of the problem is this feeling, oh, I don't want to bother people with this, or I should be able to handle this myself. After all, I am the CEO, and all these other questions, right, that keep me, and frankly, a little bit of shame also, that keeps me from asking for help. So I think being able to identify that aspect of myself was a key part of being able to ask for help in the first place. And I've gotten a lot better, I think, as I've gotten more experience with asking for the help and knowing what I can ask for. The minute I have a problem now, I just go and ask my forum. I go and ask my chapter members. I go and ask other people. And being a researcher, I just research the hell out of anything that I'm going to make a decision on, because I owe it to the people I'm leading to really have thought through all these different things. So experience, the research definitely mm-hmm. helps. But having a network of people that you have trusted, who you know can come to your aid at the moment's notice, they have your back 100%. There's nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. Really quickly, to add on to exactly that, I was thinking pretty much the words you were saying as you were saying them. Picking people to be your mentors, advisors, sounding boards, who share your values. That makes a big difference, because you know when you say, I want to do this thing, how does it sound to you? you know that they're going to be agreeing or disagreeing based on that same value set. And that's more important in the long run than any set of financial considerations or external things. It's, you know, can you live with it as a person, and do you have people who are going to give you good advice from there?
Can I just agree with that and also just put a counterpoint to that?
Sure.
I absolutely believe in the values thing, because I was thinking that I lean into my values during the hard times. I mean, that is my guiding post, my company values, my personal values.
Yep.
I always lean to it. What's interesting is that the people in my YPO forum do not share the same values with me. And it's really interesting because they provide some of the most interesting feedback, because they really challenge
contrast.
Me because of the contrast.
Yeah.
So I think there's value in having that support network of people who share the same values, because you know you can trust them. But even more valuable is somebody who you trust, who will, you know, will give you a counterpoint.
For the workshop?
Yeah, for the workshop, because these are people who share the same value of feedback and trust and respect, yeah. But they look at things in such a different perspective. It is extremely helpful, and I would never in my wildest dreams have thought about things the way they think about it.
Yeah, I think also, but if you're on your way to executing, I think make sure the people that you're executing with, the people in your company, share the same values. Otherwise, people are all going to be rolling in like 20 different directions. But I do see some, I'm usually a big fan of like, there's not one right way to run a company. Just like, there's not one right way to parent. It's probably pretty clear if like parenting goes awry or, you know, the company goes awry, that's like a fail. But like getting there's not really one right way. Just like there's not one right culture.
Yeah, that's a good way to distinguish that.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, over here.
Hi. So firstly, thank you guys for joining us today. So my name is Jennifer. I work at a fintech company in Redwood City. I'm a product marketer there. So I've been in the tech space for about 5 years in payments and fintech. I'm also a woman of color, so my question is about intersectionality. So what advice would you guys give on just how to be an authentic leader when aspects of your identity are at perceived odds?
Perceived odds. Can you give one example?
So if you occupy one sphere, so you're, you know, a certain race or ethnicity, and people think folks in this group are like this, but you're also an Ivy League graduate, and folks in that bucket are like this. So how do you present your authentic self as a leader when you have people, you know, who believe you should fit in this bucket or that bucket?
I'll start. Living in Boston for many years, and I'm an Ivy League graduate too from there, depending on how I dressed, what location I was, people would always ask me. A week would not go by when somebody wouldn't ask me who I was from. Mm-hmm. And it was just a constant reminder that I didn't belong. I would be mistaken all the time as my children's nanny. And so it just was a constant reminder. And so I decided not to deal with that. I voted with my 2 feet and moved to California.
Me too.
as a parent of mixed race kids, I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. But the fact of the matter is I deal with it every day. And my daughter comes to me. I'm pretty short. She's short. She's really short. I'm really short. And being a short Asian American in business, when all the guys are like 6 feet tall, she goes, how do you deal with this? And I go, I never think of myself as short. The only time I think I'm short is when I can't reach something. And so it may be the fact that I'm just blind and determined. But I just kind of feel like when I walk into these meetings and I'm the only woman, I'm the only Asian, and I worked in Europe for a while, so I add on top of that only American in the room too. So very similar kind of circumstances. You just have to go, I just go in there like, I know who I am and I know what I bring to this situation. And it's up to them if they decide to treat me in a certain way. If they have questions, I invite it and I address it. And then throw on top of that age, if you're a young woman in these certain circumstances too as well, it can be very difficult. But I walk into all of these situations knowing who I am and feeling very secure about that, and then knowing what I am bringing to the meeting. And if it comes up, I'm absolutely prepared to deal with it. But otherwise, the only times I'm reminded about all these intersectionalities is inside of me when I'm dealing with it.
So I would have to agree with that, being kind of a minority and a female, that I get reminded continuously. I forget that I'm Asian until like, oh yeah, I am Asian. But but I do think, and I loathe this, but on the flip side, also dealing with other kind of people of color, I know for me, it's been very helpful. Sometimes I'll be the first one to acknowledge that, like, hey, I'm Asian, right? It's okay to talk about it. For some of my Caucasian friends, that's like gives them permission to be like, oh, okay, I didn't know. I thought we were supposed to be colorblind. Because they're dealing with like, no, you don't look different, but you do look different. And, you know, I have these biases. So I loathe the idea of like minorities having to kind of teach, but reality is we are. And I've sometimes opened up with like, hey, let's like I'm Asian, you know, or I'm Chinese, or talking about my ethnicity to help them be more comfortable to talk about some of the other side as well. Of like, okay, these are some of the biases that we do have if your relationship kind of gets there. But I've also noticed that it's okay to kind of acknowledge that about yourself, because it's the elephant in the room. Like, yeah, I'm Chinese. Yeah. There's not a lot of Chinese people. I mean, in San Francisco, there's a lot of Chinese people, but there's only about 3% of us in the whole United States. Reality is it's a very, very small number. And so you do have to field a lot of questions of different stuff.
I think to that point also, I just bring it up. And I call people on it too, especially the guys in the room. I don't know if you've ever had the good guy conversation. Like, oh, yeah, I know so-and-so. He's a good guy. Yeah, he's a good guy too. And I just raise my hand. Can I be a good guy?
Yeah.
Because you can't. I mean, you would never, in those conversations, women are never brought up as a good guy. And so I point this out to my male colleagues and people in my network when they're using this language. And I go, can you please use, I know it's PC, it's horrible, but I'm just going to say it. Can you please use different language? Use solid. You know, that person, yeah, very solid. Because that's where you describe women, because otherwise we just get described as smart. And that's not the same as being a good guy. Mm-hmm. And so I call people on it. And this is the part of me that's become much more authentic, I think, recently, mm-hmm. is when I see bias, I will, even if I sense it, if I see discomfort, mm-hmm. I will put it out there and just say, hey, let's just get it on the table. Very hard to mm-hmm. do sometimes.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question.
Over here.
Hi, I'm Deepa Mehta. I work over in Intel. I wanted to bring up something that got mentioned here. Leadership, as part of leadership, your job, speak up for yourself. Make sure you represent what you need. But as a leader, your job is also to take care and recognize where the need is and address it and help them out. And that's part of leadership. That's the service piece. So I want to hear from this panel their examples of how you took your leadership position, the service piece, and helped out the people who needed their help. And I want to hear your experiences.
So for me, in my role, I'm very tied to the field organization. So one of the ways that I help my teams is I'm visible in the field. And for those of you in sales, you've heard the expression, the truth is in the field. And I go out there and I listen. And I respond to what I hear. And so I think part of the leadership skills that I have is that I'm very visible. And I remember when I worked for HP, listening to Meg once say, run to the fire, right? And I really do believe that how I've helped people is I will run to that fire. I will help them. I will get in the trenches. And I will get my hands dirty. And what's that saying about I wouldn't ask anyone to do anything that I wouldn't do? I'm not sure about that, but I can tell you that I'm going to get right in there because I don't know what all those other things are. But I will support that team, and I will give them a platform of trust. That's what, you know, I asked someone who works for me in preparation for this day, and I asked him to ask about being a leader. And he said, well, it's easy. He says, I trust you. I completely trust you. Mm-hmm. So I go back to that. I think it's important. Then that's what I've contributed, I hope.
I have kind of a tactical answer to that. So one of the things I really love doing is managing managers and helping people learn how to be managers. And one of the cornerstone things you have to learn is how to give difficult feedback, how to give performance feedback. And I always remind people to start with, first of all, it's hard, but it's your job. You have to do it. Second of all, the person who's getting this feedback is lucky because you care. Yeah. We're spending this time right now because you care. And so just reminding you, you do care. You're not doing this to be mean. You're not doing it because you're mad. It's not because you have these whatever emotions about what happened. It's because you're in a position where you have to care about them. And so really grounding it in that like emotional presence and also centering that person, that this is about them. It is not hard for you to give this feedback. It is your responsibility. And so I think that really changes the whole thing from like, oh my God, I'm scared. I don't know how to do this thing where I'm gonna have this, no one ever wants to give bad feedback. It's always scary, right? But it doesn't matter that it's scary for you because it's much harder for the person who is at the center of that conversation. And when you start from a specific example like that, the easier things are easier. You know, giving positive feedback gets really easy. So stuff like that.
I'll tag on to probably the next hardest thing for a manager to do is to fire somebody or a leader to do or to lay off. And at our company, you know, our gaming industry is actually quite tumultuous. We've been through some cycles and, you know, we've had to say goodbye to some colleagues. And our biggest thing has always been to treat people as generously as possible with as much respect as possible. Because people remember, like beginning, I remember somebody told me beginnings and endings are very important. A lot of times people will remember how you made them feel. And I remember this one time we had to go through an organizational change, and that meant we had to say goodbye to some of our employees. And I was rushing back from home, and my father was like, "Oh, you know, are you gonna be okay? You're gonna have to deliver some bad news. Like, are people gonna write in like their grievances? Like, you're using really old school language." And I go, "You know what's really amazing is that it's actually been the opposite. Like, people who have left our company will sometimes give us thank you letters. Like, thank you so much for extending the COBRA. That insurance was so incredibly important. It was something so small, and ultimately it comes from a place about caring. And I think if they can sense that and see that from every touch point, and that one particular transition, there's the onboarding and the offboarding, that one transition of how it's done, how it's handled, that will leave a mark on them for the next time to come." And we always say the industry is so incredibly small, so we always talk about Kabammers for life because we know that we'll probably cross paths again.
Just to add to that, Holly, because the theme today is about being yourself, and also workforce reductions in my career. Unfortunately, I've gone through those, and my leadership team has. It is the most important time to be yourself.
Yes.
So as you become a leader,
yes,
or as you are a peer to,
yes,
a colleague, being yourself at that moment,
right,
gets
present.
Exactly what you said. There, it changes that experience because you really care. And if you ever have someone who works for you or you with who doesn't, then they shouldn't be part of your team.
Do you know what? I have such an important way to tie it up that ties it right back to you, Charlene, is that here's the thing. Yes, you have to be yourself. But this isn't about you. Your responsibility, your job in that time with that hard conversation is to take care of that person. So you don't get to be, you don't get to cry, you don't get to say anything like, "This is so hard for me." Your job is to take care of them. And so that's where the, like, yes, you're authentic and you're very present in it, but you're also conscious of like, okay, I don't have the choice to like cry because I'm sad.
No, but I think there's a caring aspect.
Yes.
I don't think,
absolutely,
it's about crying, and I do think it's about that person. But I think most professional women I know, when they're themselves in that situation, there's a sincerity,
yeah,
that,
yes,
this isn't a nice thing. I'm not enjoying this. It doesn't mean you have to break into tears. But in reality, if you're hard about that or you're trying to put on a face, I don't think that's good either.
Oh,
so I really do believe,
yeah,
you know, you got to find that right balance. But if it comes from the heart without, you know, being overly emotional, I think it means a lot.
Yeah, by not crying, I just meant you have to make sure that they're okay first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
As a leader, no one's asking you to be nice. They just ask you to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
And honest.
And honest, fair,
right,
credible. That's what trust is built from. In the end, I hope that people will say, you know, they can agree or disagree with my strategies, but I hope they would say about me as a leader that I was fair to them.
Mm.
And so at Altimeter, we talk about the day you start. We talk about your last day, the day you start. Does that make any sense? Because we know that you're not going to stay with us forever. So we'd rather have you have an authentic experience with us. And that means not lurking around the office when you think about your next venture. It's about being forthcoming. Like, you know, I think my time here is coming to an end.
Yeah,
and many other
better
things to do and say. And integrity was one of our core values. So to be fair, tell us that you're thinking about leaving 6 months in advance instead of 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we can really help you find and land your next position.
Yeah.
But that's the agreement that we have.
Yeah.
And that's very, very rare at companies.
Like that.
But we sort of live on this fallacy that, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay here forever. So we never talk about the day you leave until the day you left.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to try to get through as many questions as possible. We have 10 minutes, so short responses. We'll try to get through them. Okay, so go.
Just getting warmed up.
My name's Dara, and I'm a virologist at Gilead. I was one of those bossy girls on the playground. So it really resonated with me when she asked how many of you have been called aggressive, and so many women raised their hand. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of in the fall at a, I'm lucky to work for an amazing woman at Gilead, and we have an amazing group, but a colleague called me aggressive, and it really stung. And I went, and I was like, you know, my first response was like, no way, you know? But how do I leverage that into real change without losing myself? Like, how do you stay aggressive, or how do you change that into something more positive so you don't lose your true self in that?
I think it's important to ask them, like, what do they mean? What kind of examples does that mean? Because in her mind, it's summed up to that label, which means so much for you. It could
well,
be something
and actually,
different.
I'll edit that. It was a male colleague that called me aggressive.
Okay. I would still ask for specific examples, for sure, in terms of like, okay, this is, you know, what exactly are you talking about here? And then when you throw in the gender piece, if there's somebody else who's behaving the same way, say, would you call this colleague aggressive as well? And call him out on his bias like that, especially because you are assertive. I'm like, yeah, I can tell you to do that. That's what I would do.
Yeah, figure out, is it him or is it you? Right? And just get that clear in the head, because I get this all the time. Someone says, you're being this. I'm like, oh, is that valid? And so when people giving good feedback is you talk about the situation, the behavior, and then how it made somebody feel. So what was the situation, what was the behavior, and why did you feel that way? And then you can decide whether you want to make a change and talk it out through that colleague. And that's how you can build trust. Okay? Go over that. Be aggressive.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, over here.
Thank you. I'm Marilee Soneman with Spotlight Sojourns and also the president of Meeting Professionals International Northern California Chapter. And this question, oh, first of all, you were all solid, so thank you.
Thank you.
And for you, Kat, your firm ran the social media campaign for BAFKit, mm-hmm. which was an incredibly viral and global phenomenon that resonates to this day for nonprofits and profitable businesses alike. Mm-hmm. Patricia Wilson talks about having no idea until the next morning when she walked in and opened up her inbox. Mm-hmm. So how did you, as the leader of that strategic and tactical campaign, ensure that authentic voice, the voice of Make-A-Wish, mm-hmm. was carried through in that massive experience?
Wow. There's like a 2-hour-long movie about the whole thing. I mean, that could be a really long, long answer. The shortest answer is when you empower your entire team to participate in a clearly stated goal, understood goal. The goal of BatKid was very strongly and specifically raise awareness of this event. And so the whole team, many of whom were part of that tweeting and being part of it that day, everyone was empowered to participate and to, you know, to be an active partner in that. I think that the way that we make it into a bigger answer than just BatKid is that as a leader, when, especially like social media, so everybody, people worry a lot about like, okay, who are we giving the keys to on social media? Be clear about who you are. What is your voice? What are your values? I mean, I will say values 10 times in every single one of these. And if you're clear about it and you have buy-in and then you give them permission and empowerment to do it, then you get good results. So
thank you.
Hope that helps.
Right here. My name is Jing. I work at EA, so I've played several of Kabam's games. But this question is for all of you on the panel. So a lot of women suffer from imposter syndrome at the workplace. So, you know, you constantly compare your work to your colleagues, and then you feel like it's not good enough. But on the flip side of that, you also, this kind of insecurity also helps you learn, because you are always achieving for something more than your current capability. So you compare to them, and then you feel like, this is how I can improve. Or when you're in the argument with them about what's the best idea, you're defending your idea, but you're also acknowledging, okay, I'm open for changing my idea if you convince me, right? So how do you guys usually balance between kind of defending or acknowledging your own idea and telling yourself, okay, my idea or my work is valuable, is good enough, while also incorporating, be self-critical, incorporating other people's criticism, or just kind of balancing between being yourself and being your achieving your better self.
I mean, for me, with my team, is I really try to listen more than I try to talk. I think the best ideas are kind of when the room goes a little crazy, right? And everyone's just contributing. And then all of a sudden someone gets up to a whiteboard and starts writing things down. And I know we're out of time, but a learning culture is created. And I think learning cultures are really important. So I just say bring everyone along and give them a platform to talk.
As someone who constantly struggles with imposter syndrome, I think I know that when I start perseverating of like, oh my God, I'm such a loser, that is just negative talk. Like, you, that's not even anything that's helping you at all or your entire team. So I think like when you hit that, like don't even give that any power. When you move towards like, hey, is this something that's valuable? You should always be with default of like, hey, let's try to give this something of value. But that, when I think about imposter syndrome, it's all that negative talk, and that has no room. There's no room.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, my name is Sheila. I've been in the semiconductor industry for about 20 years, so I think my question is primarily for Haley, but I'm interested in everyone's idea here. Do you accept that there's a prevailing kind of paradigm of leadership which may not look like us? And I say that because I haven't seen a huge shift in the upper echelons of what I call the old school high tech. It might be different in internet industries. And if that prevailing paradigm isn't shifting, what do you see from your experience that women are either not doing to be perceived as CEO material, or is there any other explanation? Let me try and frame my final question a bit more positively. If there was one thing that you could say, this is what women should be doing to break into those upper echelons, what would it be?
We need more women in tech. I mean, the reality is there's a lot of men in tech. They've had a lot of relationships for a long time, right? We need more women, and we need women who state their expectations. And I know you said one thing, but women need to be good to women. I know we've heard that today, but I've got to be better every day at this as well. Women have to be better to women, and we need to, I believe, state our expectations. We need to say what we want.
I'm going to have just one speed round of final thoughts. I wanted you to share just how do you find the strength to continue on this journey? And so we'll start with Haley, and think of it as how you think about having that strength and the courage to keep going on, and what you want to share with the audience too, so Haley.
25 years ago, my husband and I took a decision he'd be a stay-at-home dad. And that wasn't fashionable then, and he took a hard time for it. But my strength, I know there's lots of things I could say about other people, but my husband and my four children, they are the reason I wake up every single day. I almost like get emotional when I talk about them. Huh. But I want my daughters and my son to live in a great world. And I will do everything I do to make them proud. And that's just me.
Mm-hmm. So for me, one of them has been my relationship with God. When you just kind of hit rock bottom and you think you're just kind of loserly, for me personally, having that relationship and that reflection is incredibly important. And secondly, my husband is also a stay-at-home dad. I actually think a lot of women have this situation, particularly at the top. I've had a ton of conversations. And he says one thing that I think you guys should all take home, which is basically, Holly, everybody is, you know, not for you. If you can't be your own cheerleader, then who can be? So that's why I'm like, stop that negative self-talk.
Right.
Recognize it, and there's just no place for that, because nobody's going to cheerlead for you like yourself. And my husband, he's awesome.
Yeah, I would agree. Having a great husband who supports me, it's part of it. But the thing, even more than that, when we first started talking about this, was like, how do you get through the hard parts? I'm like, oh, it's not hard. I have two amazing co-founders. I never feel lonely. Like, there's a lot of it's lonely to be the CEO. But that's because we have said, you know what, the traditional corporate structure, like why aren't there more women CEOs? Because the structure's not set up for us to succeed. Yeah. So we said, okay, forget that structure. We're going to make our own. And by making our own, we're going to have three founders, three partners, where it is so interconnected and intertwined, I'm never alone. And so we have a joke, thank God there are three of us, because one of us will have a bad day or a bad or just can't deal or whatever. There are two of us to pick that up. And so I guess my takeaway for you is start a business with your best friend or friends and do it. And I mean, we're like married.
So
we are.
True.
And it makes all the difference in the world. When I talk to other CEOs and they're like, it's so hard. Who do you talk to? I'm like, oh, I talk to them all the time. Christy's been one of my partners is here. The other one isn't. I had to shut off my phone because it was vibrating so much because she was texting me. And I know she's like watching on Facebook Live right now. So we're constantly together. And that makes a huge difference to have that 24/7 support.
Yeah. I go back to this theme of resilience, and something that's really helped me recently is mindfulness and just being present, being able to recognize when I need to stop and be present. And so in many ways, I'm trying to find more of that strength internally. I mean, these are all great places, but there are some times when they're just not around, and I am just like stuck someplace. I'm about to go into a meeting. It's like, where am I? I'm completely by myself. And so being able to get centered, being able to take that breath and then define myself and calm myself so I can think clearly has been one of the best gifts over the past 5 years that I've been able to give myself. So if you haven't tried it, give it a try because it is a wonderful source of resilience for me. All right, so thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to the audience and all the best being yourself.
Thank you.